Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday. I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
And I'm Nat Cardos, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, RCSD asks customers to voluntarily curb their water usage by 25%. CAL FIRE to suspend burning in Humboldt and Del Norte counties. And almost half of Humboldt's business owners say their businesses are struggling or at risk of closing.
Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up.
As summer arrives and river flows drop, the Redway Community Services District has entered its voluntary conservation stage where water customers are encouraged to reduce their water usage. Lisa Music reports.
The Redway Community Services District has asked its customers to voluntarily conserve water as the water flow in the South Fork Eel River drops below the 25 cubic feet per second threshold the small district has set to be the flow level to start preparing customers for reduced water consumption for the summer months to come. KMUD News spoke with RCSD office manager Glenn Graydon.
Right now, stage one is voluntary. When the river gets to a certain point and it's 25 feet per second, it triggers stage one. Stage one is voluntary. You try and reduce, you become conscious of your water usage and try to reduce it by 25%. The reason we go into this voluntary step before the mandatory one for stage one is it takes time for people to create new habits. And by going into the voluntary stage one, kind of gives people the feeling that they need to look at what their water usage is and see where they can make some adjustments. So that's what the stage one is about. Stage two will happen once we get down to 20, it becomes mandatory.
Though the state nor the Garberville Sanitary District, GSD, the neighboring smaller upstream water provider, has issued water conservation guidance, RCSD, Graydon says, has their own guidelines, demands, and infrastructure that their conservation restrictions account for.
There has not been a declaration or mandatory water conservation by the state because the state's going, oh, all our reservoirs are full. They failed to give a little footnote that certain coastal rivers don't have snow packs, so we can't do that. We're not having an infrastructure issue. There's nothing going on with that. It's strictly just we've hit the 25 cubic feet per second for this one.
While wet winters help recharge river flows, they don't insulate the district from water availability in the summer. Though the district currently has over 300,000 gallons of water storage, on average, RCSD customers use approximately 150,000 gallons of water per day, Graydon said.
Water storage can help, but when you get down to that last restrictive amount at the end of summertime, so you have an extra day or two of storage water. If you don't have the water in the river, you can't pump out of the river, then we're going to start running lower and lower in water. So storage is a key, but then also having water in the river is a key also.
However, playing Mother Nature is not in RCSD's job description. Unable to change water flow of the Eel River, Graydon said the district is seeking alternative water sources.
So in the future, we'll be looking at trying to augment our water supply with a couple more wells. We have one that's not online yet, but it's more of a trickle than a good supply. So hopefully we can get a couple more wells spec'd out and hopefully get a decent supply out of them. All that stuff helps.
In years past, RCSD customers have expressed frustration and confusion about conservation for RCSD customers while neighboring GSD customers remain restriction-free. While GSD and RCSD both pull from the South Fork of the Eel River within miles of each other, their infrastructure and demand vary. Adding to the differences between the two neighboring districts is their individual infiltration galleries, the in-stream wells that water is pulled from the South Fork of the Eel River. According to Graydon, GSD in Garberville has an infiltration gallery about 10 feet deeper than the one in Redway. Additionally, due to riverbed change, the Redway infiltration gallery is on the far bank from the current river flow, impacting the system's gallon per minute pumping capabilities. Though, As of now, infrastructure issues is not the reason for the call for voluntary water conservation, according to Graydon. As Redway customers prepare for the drier months of summer, Graydon offers tips on how to conserve water.
Refrain from creating runoff when you're watering your lawn or doing some other type of work. Make sure you have a hose. You have the ability to stop the water from going out of your hose when you're washing your car. I tell you guys, whenever we can find a leak, we'll let everyone know that they have one. And the new electronic meters, they really do help out. I know some people are reluctant to use computers, but they'll be able to see what happened yesterday with the equipment that we have now. So those tools, it really does help. It can identify a leaky toilet.
Aiding in customer awareness and early leak detection, the RCSD received grants for digital water meters that alert customers of their water usage patterns and detects leaks within 24 hours. The new smart meters, if you will be installed district-wide, with some RCSD customers already online. With water flow concerns and yearly conservation demands, we ask Graydon, at what point, if ever, will Redway Community Services District decide to cap water service hookups in favor of meeting the needs of their current customers? He said,
we have to identify how our wastewater plant is processing. There's a couple of limitations. We have the limitation of the wastewater plant, and they have a limitation about the amount of water we can take out of the sources. So we're trying to extend the capacity of our wastewater plant through improved processes. And then we are trying to, by conservation, people using less water, we can have a new capacity analysis and have, so we can determine exactly how many more homes we can actually handle here in Redway.
The district, seeking grant funding to finance infrastructure improvements, including seeking well water sources and funding for storage and upgraded systems to minimize water loss while encouraging conservation, they say, have been seeking long-term solutions to a dynamic district.
There is no magic wand.
RCSD General Manager Cody Cox, speaking of the ongoing work within the district, said, quote, "This next decade will be huge for the district." End quote. In other RCSD news, the board recently approved a rate increase. Graydon shared the details.
There is the rate increase that's going to happen on 1st of July. So it's about $14.50 on the average bill for a resident, how much it will go up.
Though the increase takes effect on July 1st, Redway customers will not see the bill increase until they receive their July usage bill in August. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Lisa Music.
The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection Humboldt Del Norte Unit announced that due to recent increase in fire activity, higher temperatures, lower fuel moistures, and minimal precipitation in the forecast, the threat of wildlife impacting life, property, or natural resources is detectable. KMUD News spoke with Jeremy Ward, the battalion chief with the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Fire Prevention Bureau, on why burn permits will be suspended starting June 30th.
So each year, CAL FIRE suspends burning at different times in different counties throughout the state. We try to work with neighboring counties and kind of try and do those suspensions close in proximity to each other to try and eliminate some of the confusion for folks. But a lot of it is based on, you know, fire activity, weather patterns, resource availability, things like that. And so it's getting to a point where it's that time of year where we're going to have to look at suspending the burning, because what happens is, you know, that's another potential source of ignition out there, and not everyone burns safely as they should. So what happens is sometimes even though well-intended to reduce some hazardous wildland fuels, if people aren't careful, if they don't have clearance and they aren't maintaining their fires in attendance, what can happen is those fires can get away and become wildfires. We want to prevent that.
CAL FIRE continues to increase staffing and introduce other fire units to the other resources that are available in times of need. Stations have also started onboarding seasonal firefighters for this fire season.
You know, late spring, we do a lot of training, bringing more and more seasonals back on, doing those training evolutions so that people are prepared, the firefighters are prepared when they go out to these activities, to the fires. So with bringing all those resources on and getting all the training on, those are the priority things that we're doing. And then, you know, as the summer goes on and the fire season and activity increases, then there's times where we may even look at hiring additional resources to help out during those surge needs.
Campfires within designated organized campgrounds or on private property that are otherwise permitted will be allowed if the campfire is maintained in such a manner as to prevent its spread into wildland and other private property. Ward expresses some cautionary steps the public can take to help prevent wildfire and keep your surroundings safe. Here's what you can do.
You know, we want folks to be cognizant of what they're doing and how their activities could spark wildfires. Everything from, you know, there's a lot of recreation going on this time of year, so a lot of people are hauling boats and trailers, and people need to make sure that, you know, the tires on those vehicles are in good shape, make sure that they're not dragging tow chains. You know, we have had a number of fires that have occurred where, you know, people have been towing older trailers or trailers with their tires are not in very good condition. The tire fails, and then all of a sudden now you're dragging an axle down the side of the road, and that creates a lot of sparks.
For more information on how to prepare, visit readyforwildfire.org and preventwildfireca.org.
Business owners across Humboldt County are pessimistic about their prospects, according to the results of a recent survey conducted by local business organizations. Almost half of them fear they may not survive in the medium or long term. KMUD's Sigur Bjorn spoke to Nancy Olson at the Redwood Coast Chamber Foundation about the survey and possible solutions to help improve the situation.
In a recent survey, 43% of business owners in Humboldt County said their businesses are struggling or at risk of closing. 55% say that safety concerns affect their ability to do business. On top of these stunning statistics, business owners shared that their biggest challenges are the cost of goods and services, decreased sales, high operational costs, and attracting and retaining qualified staff. Basically, what these owners are saying is that their biggest business challenge is everything. The survey's results paint a dire picture of the state of local businesses, and by extension, the local economy. But are these results accurate? We spoke to Nancy Olson at the Eureka Chamber of Commerce and asked if she believes the results painted an accurate picture of the local business landscape.
I would say yes. Some people would look at the data, you know, glass half full. It's certainly not full. Our community, our county, and this is not news, but we are really a micro business economy, not just small business. Small business has a different definition at the national level. We are micro businesses. The vast majority of our respondents have 10 or fewer employees. They have less than $500,000 in income, and a lot of them have less than $100,000 in income. This was conducted during the month of April, basically. Things, you know, the uncertainty was really peaked at that time with tariffs and such. I think people are still feeling the uncertainty and certainly are being impacted by the tariffs, but perhaps not at the really dire levels that were being talked about at that time. So while there's a lot of uncertainty and costs have gone up across the board for everyone, I don't know that it's as bad as people were fearing at that moment. Not that it couldn't again shift that way.
The pessimistic outlook so many business owners have on the future of their operation is in line with Olson's own evaluation of the situation.
Our survey got 214 responses, mostly businesses and a handful of nonprofits. So the data set is meaningful. It went out not only from us, not only from Eureka Main Street, but also chambers all across the county. From SBDC, from REDEC, from a number of different sources. So it really reached out broadly into the community. The vast majority of respondents were in Eureka, but we did have responses from Willow Creek to Manila and Oreck down to Soham. So we had responses from all across the county. We had a good chunk also from Arcata, a fair number from Ferndale, McKinleyville, and Fortuna as well. So I feel like our methodologies for getting it out and for the responses and the data that we got, I think, is meaningful. It's statistically viable. Is it accurate? My gut says yes. Based on the many conversations that I have, I think other people are not surprised by the data. So I think it is, you know, it's credible data.
Other statistics not yet mentioned include 59% expect costs to go up and 41% are expecting fewer customers. Glass firmly half empty, if even that. And there are, of course, reasons for this. A large part of businesses in the area have low turnover. They are also very dependent on the local community. Almost 80% report that their customer base is local, which creates an issue when you factor in the average household income in the county.
We have a community that is pretty impoverished by all measures, and the vast majority of people need to shop at the big box stores or online to get the best prices so that they can make ends meet. Mm-hmm. So how can we make shopping local more affordable? I really want to see us launch a Choose Humboldt on a Budget type of a campaign. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? How can the stores and restaurants adapt to be more affordable to all of the people in our community? A Shop Local campaign is one tool in the toolbox. It isn't the panacea that's going to solve all of our problems for our local businesses, but it is important to bring it to mind for our local residents that we need to support our neighbors. We need to support those local shops, you know, getting goods locally. One of the bright spots, 87% of the respondents to the survey share that they feel very or somewhat connected to other businesses in their area. So there is a sense of cohesion and connectedness within our business community. I think that positions us for more opportunities for collaboration and more opportunities for figuring things out together.
Cohesion and cooperation are the keys to local businesses surviving and hopefully thriving in Humboldt County. And things are happening on that front. A reinvigorated Choose Humboldt campaign is in the works. North Edge Financial, North Coast SBDC, and Humboldt Mate recently hosted an economic summit for retailers and restaurants. And members of the Community Economic Resilience Coalition, or CERC, meet regularly to talk about their experiences and find ways to work together.
We all know each other. We mm-hmm. all work well together. We all have a great working relationship. I would say, you know, it's one of the beauties of Humboldt. It's because we are such a small, remote community, you know, we really do all have to know each other and to work well together.
That was Nancy Olson with the Eureka Chamber of Commerce and the Redwood Coast Chamber Foundation speaking about a recent survey among local business owners. We'll have more from our conversation with Olson at a later date, and we'll also be covering efforts by the business community to make shopping locally more attractive, competitive, and affordable. I'm Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMUD.
Turning to Mendocino, CAL FIRE is pushing forward with wildfire resilience and hiring in Mendocino County in the face of federal cuts to FEMA KZYX's Elise Cox report.
It's hot, and the wildfires are beginning to burn. But the state of California says it's ready, even in the face of large cuts to federal funding for hazard mitigation. In April, FEMA retracted nearly $1 billion in funding for BRIC grants, which are dedicated to building resilient infrastructure in communities, BRIC. Among the BRIC grants was $50 million awarded to Mendocino County to create defensible space, reduce hazardous fuels, and retrofit homes. While the state of California can't replace all the funding that's been lost, it has announced $72 million in new CAL FIRE grants, including a $4.3 million grant to the Redwood Forest Foundation in Mendocino County, $13 million for Humboldt County and $4.6 million for Lake County.
This is to do work on about 20,000 acres of land throughout California.
That's Alan Tallhelm, an assistant deputy director at CAL FIRE.
These are large landscape scale grants, so minimum size is about 800 acres. These grants are intended to increase forest resilience to wildfire and climate change, reduce wildfire risk to communities, protect watersheds, improve wildlife habitat, sequester carbon, and support rural economies.
The effort represents a combination of hazard mitigation and economic development. The Mendocino County project will target the Anderson Creek watershed. Anderson Creek is a tributary to Indian Creek, which in turn feeds into the South Fork Eel River.
This is the project that's on just under 900 acres. It's in a fire-prone watershed that's also a priority watershed for coho salmon recovery on the South Fork of the Eel River in northern Mendocino County.
Among the goals are improving habitat, improving wild food production, and providing access to the community to a relatively remote forest.
And just overall, it's a redwood forest restoration project following decades of previous industrial timber management on that piece of land.
Karen Youngblood of the Redwood Forest Foundation said the project will last 5 years and create about 80 jobs.
For the first 9 months, we'll be doing doing what we call CEQA surveys, which includes botanical surveys, archaeological surveys, wildlife surveys, just to kind of see if there are any rare resources in the project footprint that need to be protected. So the first year will be spent covering, all the treatment areas and surveying all the treatment areas to make sure that we protect any of the rare resources out there. So the actual fuel reduction work will happen after all the CEQA surveys have been completed and permitted. So it'll be next year, 2026, hopefully spring, summer 2026 is when we'll begin work.
Jobs will include fuel reduction, reforestation, trail building, and prescribed burning. In Humboldt County, the Cottrell Ranch in the eastern part of the county will receive $6.9 million. Here's Alan Tallhelm again.
So that project title is Butte Creek Buck Mountain Forest Health Project. And that one covers about 2,400 acres. And so that one includes some thinning projects, so fuels reduction, some reforestation, oak woodland restoration, and then also prescribed fire, so getting some good fire out on the landscape. And that includes work on both private forest lands and also public rights of way.
Tallhelm said the project is in an area where CAL FIRE frequently responds to vegetation fires. Another project is for $6.2 million to restore forests and oak woodlands in southern Humboldt.
Part of that work is done on Humboldt Redwood State Park, and that's again building some continuity with some previous projects that are in that area. And it's also to do some additional work of prescribed fire on some industrial timberland and private properties that are around that area. One of the reasons we like this is it also ties to a previous award that we had. So we gave a $10 million regional landscape grant from the Forest Health Program to the North Coast Resource Partnership.
This timberland is adjacent to a previous CAL FIRE project.
So we really like, trying to connect projects, leverage previous work that's been done. So we're not just dabbing little work here and there around the state with these investments. We're really trying to be more strategic with the investments that we're making with these dollars.
While these projects are all funded with money in the current fiscal year, Tallhelm says there will be additional grant opportunities when the new fiscal year starts in July.
We anticipate that we will have additional funds, partly as a result of the climate bond, Prop 4, that passed back in November. Within that bond language was several hundred million dollars that should be coming to CAL FIRE over time. We expect next year to probably have in the neighborhood of a bit over $100 million from the bond.
There's also a continuous appropriation from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund.
So the state's cap and trade program that supports CAL FIRE's Forest Health Program and Wildfire Prevention Grants Program and some other programs as well. So That's typically most of the funds that we award are from that cap and trade program. And so the bond funds are additional.
While the loss of federal funding hurts, forest health and resilience work is continuing. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
In state news, UCFW workers in Long Beach authorize what could become the largest grocery strike in modern U.S. history. KPFA's Dahlia Lozier reports.
About 45,000 unionized employees of grocery stores across Southern California have voted to authorize a strike. The vote follows allegations of unfair labor practices and 4 months of contract negotiations. Union members held a rally on Friday to draw public attention to their demands and to show companies they're ready to strike if negotiations break down. Kroger and Albertsons, parent companies of Ralph's, Vons, and Pavilions, as well as Stater Bros and Gelson's, are some of the employers in question. Jenna Thompson is communications director for United Food and Commercial Workers Local 324.
They're not bargaining with like the intent to get a contract. They're kind of blowing off our members when they talk at the bargaining table. Workers need living wages. Currently, the company is offering $3 over 3 years, which doesn't even account for the inflation that we've seen in like 1 year. And so it's just not enough to live on, especially in Southern California. And so we needed to, you know, get out in front of their stores and really, you know, hit them where it hurts.
In an emailed statement, Courtney Carranza, a spokesperson for Southern California Division of Albertsons, said, "We respect the rights of workers to engage in collective bargaining and are negotiating in good faith to achieve a balanced agreement that rewards our associates, benefits our customers, and is sustainable for our company and the competitive grocery industry." Allegations of unfair labor practices are without merit. Members of the union bargaining team are accusing their employers of unfair labor practices, including worker surveillance, use of union-busting tactics to stall negotiations, and a failure to address chronic understaffing, which organizers say has led to customer service issues, safety risks, and overworked employees. Workers are demanding a wage increase to meet the rising cost of living, affordable health care, reliable pensions, more staffing, and safer and less exploitative working conditions. Thompson talked about those conditions and suggested that they will have long-term negative implications for corporations such as Albertsons.
One of my workers who I talked to yesterday had 2 people up front for like the entire night. That was it. The lack of staffing in the store really hurts workers. It hurts customers because there's not product on the shelves that they can buy. And then it ultimately hurts these companies' bottom line.
The last major strike organized by grocery store workers in Southern California ended in 2004. If union members decide to strike now, this could become the largest grocery store strike in modern U.S. history, potentially involving 100,000 workers nationwide at Kroger and Albertsons chains. United Food and Commercial Workers affiliated research and shopper surveys cite chronic understaffing and declining service quality. And a recent Consumer Reports investigation found Kroger overcharged customers by 18.4%. Thompson emphasized the importance of a better contract for workers and the effects that a better contract could have on customers.
These workers are like cornerstones of our communities. Everyone needs to eat. So these workers need to have wages that they can afford to live on. They deserve to have retirements that they can rely on, healthcare that they can use when they get sick, you know, and they need the staffing in the stores to, you know, give customers a good shopping experience. And so it's really simple. That's what we're fighting for.
Contracts for 65,000 workers expired March 2nd, 2025. Further contract negotiations are scheduled for next week. Union organizers say they are prepared to strike if no progress is made. For KPFA News, I'm Dahlia Lozier.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Lisa Music, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, and Dahlia Lozier.
KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. You can also follow us on social media.
If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-6205 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.
And I'm Jordan Pangelinan.